budgets, the B word. And it's that budgets are a tool to help you fulfill your income's purpose, right? And so too many of us, I think, focus entirely too much on what budgets take from us and not necessarily what they give us. So we think about it as like a diet, but we don't really think about, let's say, you know, I'm thinking about food again.
Are you hungry?
Maybe. I'm always hungry. This is how I think, right? But anyway, I think a lot of us understand that. And in that moment, it really highlighted a couple of those observations. So,
yeah, I like that metaphor of budgets being like your diet, but the purpose for your income being nutrition. It's sort of that holistic umbrella that your budget falls under. Welcome to the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success, where we explore life at the intersection of money. I'm Kirsten.
And I'm Julian. Today, we're talking about the purpose of income.
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds very
esoteric. This is already, you know, this is one of my favorite topics because one, I'm a sucker for a good framework. And the purpose of income is a simple one that just helps us understand how to manage our money at key stages throughout our life. And it helps you develop a clarity about where you are today, what to do with your future income, and how to ultimately make your income work for you instead of the other way around.
Yeah, I am not a sucker for a good framework.
You're bad.
I'm frameworked out, but I'm grateful that we came up with this one. And before we get into the details, I want to give a little bit of backstory as to how we came up with this. And it really started in, is it Opelika?
I think it's
Auburn University. Let's just go with that. Wherever Auburn University is, it might be in Auburn, Alabama.
It is. But Opelika is right outside.
Yeah. I don't know. I just know the exit. We were in Auburn University. This was a few years ago. And we were speaking with some students there. We were brought in to talk to them. And I was actually a little more than students. It was administrators,
faculty.
And teachers, faculty. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about money, our personal finance, financial independence, all that stuff. And then as we were speaking to them, we asked the question, you know, at a certain point, everyone was all jazzed up. They were asking questions. Then we asked this question, what is the purpose of income? And it was like we had sucked all the air out of the room. Everyone was kind of confused. They were like,
yeah, it's like asking what's the meaning of life.
It's exactly, that was a look on their face. It was like, I don't know. And then someone raised their hand and said, retirement. And I was like, okay, let's just stop. Like, I get it. This is a confusing question. But I was glad we asked it because it highlighted a couple of different things which we suspected, and I believe a lot of people kind of struggle with understanding this idea, and a lot of it is based on our beliefs and our experience and talking and helping people. And so this is what we came up with, but this is what asking that question and that group's inability to answer it with clarity taught us. A couple of things, but three primarily. The first is that most people are conditioned to chase income indefinitely, right? We just, that's what we've been taught. Mm-hmm. Get a good job, get a better job if you can, get a better job if you can,
get a
or
raise,
stay at that.
Get a promotion.
And even if you get that job, you're still sort of chasing, you know, let's say another job in that company, but it's like an indefinite thing. We understand the idea of retirement, but we don't really think of it as an endpoint. And the vast majority of us certainly don't think of it as something that could happen or occur sooner than, let's say, the traditional age. So that's one of the things that's highlighted. The second one I actually think is even more interesting, and it's that most people conflate salary and wages with income.
Yes.
We use those words interchangeably.
We sure do.
Right? And it's for a lot of different reasons. Most people only have one source of income, and so they just use those terms interchangeably. And the reality is there are very clear differences in all of those different types of income. I'm a foodie, so I always think about food, and it's like, there's pasta, but there's hundreds of varieties of pasta. But so many of us are so familiar with spaghetti, we just call everything spaghetti.
Pasta.
Doesn't matter. If it has meat sauce on it, we call it spaghetti. The third is that budgets, you know, budgets, the B word. And it's that budgets are a tool to help you fulfill your income's purpose, right? And so too many of us, I think, focus entirely too much on what budgets take from us and not necessarily what they give us. So we think about it as like a diet, but we don't really think about, let's say, you know, I'm thinking about food again.
Are you hungry?
Maybe. I'm always hungry. This is how I think, right? But anyway, I think a lot of us understand that. And in that moment, it really highlighted a couple of those observations. So,
yeah, I like that metaphor of budgets being like your diet, but the purpose for your income being nutrition. It's sort of that holistic umbrella that your budget falls under.
Correct. Wellness, a much larger purpose.
Yeah. You know, I remember there was a time in my life where I was about to turn down a higher paying job opportunity because the job wasn't cool enough. Do you remember this?
Oh, I remember it clearly.
Yeah, this was when we first started.
We were on the verge of arguing because I was so frustrated.
You were, because you could not understand my thinking. This is when we first started dating and I told you about it. And I wanted this job that was in like this up and coming part of the business, working on like mobile apps. Mm-hmm. And this was in more of the legacy part of the business. And I told you that I was going to say no to this job opportunity. And you said, the only reason you're saying that is because you don't know what you'd do with the money. And it really stuck with me because as much as I hate to say it, you were right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about what I'd do with it.
Speaker broke up. Can you just say that again? Or maybe we can ask the producer to add like an echo.
You were right. But you were, because I had not thought about what I'd do with it or who I'd become when I wasn't saddled in debt and living paycheck to paycheck. And it really sparked my philosophy that I use now, which is that we need to start giving our income the same meaning and valor that we give to our work. Because the power associated with our income isn't related to spending or buying or purchasing. It's really in the purpose that you assign it. And what we've realized over the years is that if you don't give your income a purpose, somebody else will.
Yep.
Understanding the purpose of our income has kept us focused on our financial goals and made our journey more meaningful. Now, your outcome may be different, but the goal of giving your income a purpose is to recognize what you're up against and make progress towards an alternative where, again, your money is working for you, and then you can redeploy your actual labor towards other things in your life, whether it's raising your family or, you know, contributing to your community or working on causes that you care about. We go into much greater detail in our latest course called Boost Your Income for Life, which you can find in the Success Achievers community through the All Access Library once it's out. But today, we're going to walk you through the four stages within the Purpose of Income framework and explain what makes each of them different.
Yeah. So let's jump into it. Even as we're speaking, I'm realizing that we're using a couple of terms interchangeably. And I think it actually works either way. You can think of this as a process. You can think of it as a framework. You can think of each of these as stages or doors that you need to walk through before the ultimate purpose is fulfilled, if you will. But to answer the question, going back to that moment in Auburn University, there are four purposes of income. This is how we think about it. The four purposes are security. That is the first. The second is flexibility. Third is independence. And the last or ultimate purpose of your income is freedom. So let's go back to the beginning. Let's start with the first. The first purpose of your income is security. And this is pretty simple. It's to provide you with the basics that you need for survival. That's physical safety, clothing, shelter, food, all of those things that will allow you to be a healthy and functional citizen. And it's important to understand that in this stage or at this step within this process, it's important to note that in terms of security, you do not have the nicest version of anything. We're not talking about premium plans or bells and whistles. It really just means that your days and your decisions aren't burdened by hunger or impending houselessness or the inability to acquire resources that you might actually need. We're talking about being able to have enough to get by and to ensure that you aren't at immediate risk of financial catastrophe. I think it's also important to note that in this stage, any money that is spent at this step in the process is not working for you. You're working for it. And because I can't help myself and I'm a foodie, I automatically think about food. And for me, this was, and I remember it clearly, if I burped right now, I could probably conjure up the smell. But we're talking about, this was my hot dog, baked beans, peanut butter and jelly, and Yoplait yogurt.
The go-to meals.
Mm-hmm. This is what I can afford. This is what I have to get by. And so I think it's important because a lot of people, you remember, some people, they immediately think ramen.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But this is the ramen phase.
Mine was a Wendy's 5-piece nugget.
Wow.
Dollar. And fries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're lucky, you add a little Frosty in there.
Yeah, cereal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these are tough times. But I think we all sort of...
But it's a phase.
It is a phase. It is a phase, right? And so the other thing about financial security, and I think we've spoken about this in previous episodes, is particularly here in the United States, that we have this tendency to be overly optimistic. And so when we're talking about financial security, this is a black or white issue.
Yeah.
You can't be a little bit financial insecure, like a little broke, or, you know, we like to sugarcoat it. It's like, I'm getting by and living paycheck to paycheck. It's like, this is financial security. And I think it's important to acknowledge that and to define that, because otherwise you're going to fool yourself into either spending or missing out on things, right? Like, just to help make yourself feel good. But it's really, really important to be really, really clear about that. And the other thing that I will add to that is, this is not a stage or feeling that is restricted to low income people. There are plenty of high income people who are living paycheck to paycheck because their cost of living is so incredibly high. That is a very real thing. And I know that that can be upsetting for low income people who are actually in a similar boat. But I do think it's important to call that out. And we actually know quite a few people who are in that stage. And so with the rising cost of higher education, if you think about daycare, which is a big one, housing, even people with good jobs can find themselves like one bad situation, just like low income people, from catastrophic financial loss. And so in order to break that cycle, you have to be diligent. Dare I say, you have to be purposeful with how you manage and spend your money. When you look at the average budget for the typical American, it's safe to say that around two-thirds, I think specifically it's around 63% of annual household expenses go to the big three. That's housing, transportation, and food. And so if you're looking to break out of this phase or grow from this phase, it just makes sense to focus on those big three, because that's where you're going to get the biggest bang for your buck. And if you can do that successfully, then you be ready to move on from that stage of security and fulfill the next purpose of your income, which is flexibility.
That's right. So once all of your core needs are met and after those bills are paid, you have decisions to make about what to do with the excess money, in theory. You could revisit the basics and choose to spend more in those respective categories. For example, you can move out of your current living space and find a better, more expensive one. Or you could continue to just eat better food and buy better wine. We don't shame people for their buying preferences. After years of helping friends and family and strangers make better financial decisions, we've learned that this particular phase where you have flexibility to decide to spend more in certain areas is where most people get stuck in an endless cycle of buying up. Flexibility is a necessary stage for financial progress. The problem is that too few people move beyond it. Whenever they're faced with the decision of whether to spend on their future or buy something today, people tend to have the tendency to focus on the things that they can see. So instead of moving on to the third phase, which we'll get to in a minute, which is independence and buying your independence, they just keep enjoying the benefits of their flexibility and buying more and more. Bigger cars, bigger homes, more exclusive education. The author, there's an author, Ronald Wright, who describes this phenomena as the progress trap. And his theory is that people pursue what they think is progress and initially solve a short-term problem, only to also create this long-term threat that they don't have the resources to solve.
Yeah, we call it golden handcuffs. It goes by lots of different names, but without question, golden handcuffs is another reference to this time period. And I think, you know, the way that I think about it, and we reference this in the course, is that too many people are in this situation for a variety of reasons, but I like to think of it as, I really can't help myself with the food references.
I know. Can I? Gotta get you a bagel or something.
Well, you know, I think we refer to, you know, money as seeds. And if you plant your seeds, we know that it can reap a bountiful harvest. But I think the reason why people end up in this stage is because they eat too many of the seeds. They ate the seeds that they should have planted. And to your point, that creates a problem downstream or years later because they don't have enough to sustain their lives when they really, really need it in their golden years. And so And obviously there are other reasons, but we're specifically talking about those that most people are suffering with, unfortunately, which is, you know, sort of succumbing to the pressures of consumerism, and they call it keeping up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. and all of those things. It is very much a part of American culture and social identity. And so it's worthy of conversation, which is why we wanted to create this framework. So let's talk about how to move past flexibility, right? And the way to move past it is pretty simple. There are two primary ways. First is saving. And so for every dollar you earn, you want to make sure that you are saving a percentage of that income so that you're not always working to earn more money. The general rules of personal finance typically say around 10 to 15% of your income should be saved. If you're able to do that, then strive for it. If not, then let's talk about how we can earn more so that we can get to 10 to 15%. But I also think we have to acknowledge that we are on the verge, I would say, or likely in the middle of a retirement crisis. And a lot of that, I could say, is also because many of us have followed these traditional rules of thumb. And yeah, so we really can't decouple the two. Mm-hmm. And I think we really ought to give that a second look. And so I feel very comfortable saying 10 to 15% may not be enough. And I know it might seem like a bit of a stretch, but that new rule of thumb likely needs to be somewhere in the ballpark of 20 to 25%. I think that might actually help set a new standard and hopefully ensure that more people can retire comfortably. And so saving, certainly a great way to help grow or progress from the flexibility stage. And certainly from the security stage, if you're able to. But that's not it, because saving money is not enough. You actually need to put that money into work. And that's really where investing comes into play. And so investing your money is putting that money to work so that it can eventually start to work for you. And so when you hear about people who retired happily, it's not because they just saved. It's because they saved and put that money to work. And that money started producing income for them that they can then enjoy in their latter years.
Yeah, I think it's important to, this is another group of words that people use interchangeably. They say saving when they mean investing, mm-hmm. and they say investing when they mean saving. Mm-hmm. And it's important to distinguish the two. When you are saving money, you're putting aside cash for a future purchase. When you're investing money, you're putting that money to work for you.
You're spending for the future.
Exactly, which is a very abstract construct. But it's an important one to understand, because the people who use the flexibility in their income to save and invest eventually move beyond the stage of financial flexibility and transition into the next stage, which is financial independence. Now, the term financial independence means different things to different people. But in general, it's commonly defined as the point where you don't have to work to earn income. You may still choose to, but you don't need to, because you can derive your income from the investments you've already made. There are two magical things that start to happen in the financial independence phase. Your money starts to work for you, and in turn, you gain greater autonomy in how you make your money. So people who are financially independent have saved and invested so much of their money, they don't have to work, or at a minimum, don't have to work as much as people who haven't saved and invested as much of their money. And they don't depend on a job for income, because their investments have compounded over time, and as a result, they produce income. They can live comfortably knowing that their investments produce income and grow at a rate faster than they consume, which is what makes them financially independent.
Let's dig into that a little bit more, back into the traditional definition here. So, and the math is pretty simple. I use likely the most popular example here. And so if you take the amount of money that you spend on an annual basis and multiply that by 25, let's just use an example here. If your annual expenses are $40,000, you need about $1 million to be what is the traditional version of financially independent. And at that point, studies have shown that you can withdraw 4% from your investments, assuming they're liquid, well allocated and all that stuff, and live off of that amount indefinitely, because your investments growth will outpace what you withdraw. I like to think of it like a giant cup of water, right? So think about like those giant 7-Eleven big gulp cups.
Yes.
In the bottom of the cup is a tiny little hole that's about 4% wide. And at the top of the cup is the stock market, which is growing at a rate of about 10% annually and pouring more money into your cup. So yes, there is a leak about 4% wide at the bottom, but there is a significantly larger pour coming from the growth in the stock market coming into the top. And so, yeah, you may have some periods where the fill line is at the middle, but there are going to be some times where the market is compounding at greater than 10%. And then it might, in some cases, overflow. I think 2021, which is one of those confusing years, is probably, I'm sorry, 2020 was one of those confusing years, but was also a great example. You could arguably say the same for the last 10 years. But you get the idea here. You're withdrawing less than what the cup or the rate at which the cup is being filled or growing in and of itself. And as a result, you really have very little concern about ever running out of money.
Yeah, I love that. And again, that's just one definition of financial independence. That assumes that you never want to earn another dollar again from employment. You're always going to be waiting on the top of your cup to fill. But if you don't mind working occasionally, there are other varieties of financial independence that allow you to earn income, not allow you, you don't need permission, but encourage and enable you to earn income along the way. So to get off of food metaphors, I actually use a road trip metaphor. If you live in Georgia like we do and you want to take a cross-country trip to Vegas and you're driving, just because you have a full tank of gas in Georgia doesn't mean that you don't stop along the way to get gas to make it to Vegas, right?
It's not like you can't go.
Yeah, it's not like you can't go because you're one full tank of gas.
Because I don't have enough gas to get to California.
Exactly.
Or Vegas.
Vegas is in Nevada, but yes. You would stop along the way. And this is the more modern definition of financial independence. And I think it's sparked because there are so many new income earning sources that are available due to the digital economy that people feel more comfortable saying, if something happens, I can join the gig economy, I can join the creator economy, I can get a part-time job, I can work remote. You can do all of these things to kind of earn income along the way and still consider yourself financially independent.
Yeah, it's really exciting times. To your point, we know more and more people who are achieving this, who are taking this path. And we actually cover a few of those pathways to earning income or these alternative or non-traditional paths to earning income and investing these days. We cover a little bit of that in our course. So we talk about investing and real estate. But to be clear, even if you are financially independent, right, let's say you've done this, you're still on a budget. Right. You still, because you have a finite amount of money. And so assuming you've managed your lifestyle responsibly along the way, this nest egg will last you a really, really long time, but it may not necessarily last you forever because cost of living changes, life happens, things happen. So if your goal is to reach an even higher net worth and truly not have to think or dare I say, worry about money again, then even at this stage of your life, you will have to think and act differently to move on to that final stage in this process. And so, in other words, you'll need to treat some of the money in your cup as capital. So it's not just money that you can draw from. You need to really shift your mindset. Think of it as capital to allow it to grow even further. And when you do that well, it leads you to fulfilling that ultimate purpose, which is freedom. It's a very abstract idea. It's a very popular idea, this idea of financial freedom. But I think of it or define it as having more money than you can reasonably spend or having absolute zero concern of ever running out of money in your lifetime. That doesn't mean you become a billionaire, a multimillionaire, or in some cases, even a millionaire. Personally, I have no aspirations to becoming a billionaire, but some people do, which means they're committed to like living their life to achieving that goal, which is perfectly fine. But I'm good with where we are and with our target, and that's what we're focused on.
Great. Let's dig into that a little bit more after the break. I think what makes financial freedom such an abstract concept is that everyone really has a different emotional relationship with money.
Yeah.
And that's truly the hardest part to wrap your head around. And what we've learned after doing this for so long is that financial freedom is a state of mind. If you've achieved financial independence, the amount of money that you believe you need beyond that is entirely up to you. And even that number may change over time. But the benefits of financial freedom are clear. With more money, you'll be less restricted to a budget. You'll have even more options at your disposal, and you'll be able to help even more people with little to no concern about how it'll financially impact you. But I don't know. I still sometimes find the goal of financial freedom a little intimidating. I think because it is so abstract and requires me to do like my own work. Instead of somebody telling me like, this is how you do it. Do you ever find it intimidating or kind of...
Sometimes I do, but then I remind myself that the process of earning it won't feel the same. So at the risk of sounding elitist, I'll say, you know, getting from a million to 5 million is a lot easier than getting from zero to 100,000.
That's true.
Or like zero or 100,000.
Zero to anything is much harder.
It's much harder.
Than one to something else.
Correct. So it's not like, and I think that's just how the brain works. You start to think like, oh my gosh, you know, I know what it felt like and I'm exhausted going from zero to, let's say, 500,000. There's no way that I can do that 100x or 10x or whatever. And it's like, well, you don't have to.
Right.
Your money is actually going to be doing a lot of that labor and carrying a lot of that for you. You're going to have to think differently to your point. You're not going to be spending as much sweat equity anymore or employing elbow grease. Like, you're leveraging credit in relationships and political capital, intellectual capital, creativity, all of those different things, or just time, right? Like, in luck, if you will, you know what I mean?
Skills.
Yeah. So it can be intimidating and it can be hard and uncomfortable, but it will not be, it's not like a replay of the earlier parts of the journey.
Yeah. I think I struggle with it because I haven't seen as many examples in my real life.
That too.
We've met so many financially independent people over the years of all types, retired teachers, geo arbitragers, expats, small business owners, real estate investors, you name it. But I've only met a handful of people who consider themselves financially free.
Yeah.
And that's changing. So maybe ask me, you know, in a year if I've gotten closer to my definition of financial freedom.
But you know what's interesting is all of those people still work.
Yeah. The ones that are financially free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They still work. They're still working. They're still building things. They're still creating things. You know what I mean? And nobody gives them flack for it.
Yeah.
They only give the lowly multimillionaires flack and how dare they call themselves financially independent. But nobody questions billionaires who are still working and creating things and launching things.
Yeah. I think it's fun to watch somebody create things without worrying about money.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can afford to fail in major ways when you're financially free and still creating. We're actually going to do a deeper discussion about financial independence and financial freedom during our next Success Achievers Live webinar, which is on Wednesday, July 28th at 1 p.m. Eastern. If you're interested in unpacking these stages with us, then join us. The login information as well as the playback can all be found at achievers.success.com under events. So let's recap. We've covered the purpose of income, which has four phases: security, flexibility, independence, and freedom. And today we kind of went over like a truncated version, but if you're interested in hearing more about the framework, it's the first module of our new course in Success Achievers. Do you want to talk a little bit about our new course?
Yeah, let's do that. And so, you know, we started with income for a lot of reasons, but I think more than anything, because if we didn't, I felt like we'd be underserving our audience. Yeah. A lot of the people in the Success Achievers community and a lot of our followers are smart, capable, and educated people. They don't really need to be told other ways to save money or how to cut back. That's not really the problem. Many of them are not financially illiterate either. What they need is instruction and validation on how to earn more, because they're only familiar with earning money one way, or let's say in one particular lane, not through a side hustle or a business or an e-commerce site or through partnering in a business or leveraging their creativity. You know, they're like most people who are, I've got a good job and I'm not quite sure, but I'm not where I want to be. What do I do? And so it's like, how do we boost your income? You got to think differently. And once you do that, it sort of unlocks all of these other opportunities that can help you progress along the process or this particular framework. Mm-hmm. And so the fact is, if you can't save what you haven't earned.
Right.
So we wanted to help people identify and leverage all of the relevant and effective ways that they could start earning more today.
Right. So the course is 5 modules and it's kind of masterclass style, if you're familiar with that format. As I mentioned, we start in the first module with a deeper dive into the purpose of income framework. And then in module 2, we discuss the differences between passive and active income, and more importantly, why they matter so much. We debunk some common misperceptions about passive income, and then we move on to module 3, where we actually review the 7 forms of income and how they work. And the reason this module was so important to us was because Like Julian said, people tend to use the terms income and wages interchangeably. Mm-hmm. They talk about income the same way they talk about pasta, like we said at the top of the episode. And the reality is the type of pasta matters. You would not want to make a lasagna using spaghetti noodles.
Hey, and- you might if you were like wanted to get a lot of likes.
Okay, but you wouldn't make a ravioli using angel hair. You can't hold nothing in no angel hair.
I can't even envision that in
exactly.
my head.
So wages is just one form of income. And when you're making your income plan, you need to pick the form that best fits your goal. And we get into all of that within the course.
Yeah. I'll be honest. I didn't think I would enjoy creating it, but it was actually really, really fun.
I know. I was so nervous. And I might read a little awkward on the camera, but it cut us some slack. It's our first time. But I really enjoyed creating it too. Like if you're just listening, I learned a lot.
Yeah, writing, shooting, rehearsing, filming, like the whole thing was really, really interesting. I enjoyed it. It was a great challenge. And even as we were teaching it, I could like hear light bulbs going off in my own head.
Yeah.
So I know it'll help a lot of people who really need that information.
Yeah. Okay, so module 3 is all about the types of income, and it's pretty dense, so hang in there, because then we move into module 4, which is my favorite, because guess what? It's another framework. It's another framework. Again, yeah,
No one knows that song but you.
An original. I just love frameworks because I've always been the kind of student who is great at following instructions. So we kind of overwhelm you in module 3, but then we give you module 4 as a chaser. It's like taking a shot if you're into that.
Okay, that sounds a lot better.
Yeah, module 3 is like angry tequila, and then module 4 is lime. Okay. So, anyway, in module 4, it's a super simple framework that shows you how to sort income earning opportunities in a way that allows you to narrow down your options based on your goal. And then last but not least is Julian's favorite module, which is module 5, which is that about that action module.
Yeah, also because I just love the number 5.
Do you?
But yes, well, I was born on the 5th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I knew that.
Sure. A little sketchy. But no, module 5 is my favorite because, to your point, it is all about action planning. And I can tell you, you know, I wish I could say we bat 1,000. We can talk to 1,000 people. And I can assure you that most people will absorb modules 1 through 4. They will take it. They will feel good about themselves. But they fail to act. They fail to jump. They fail to actually make the changes. And so that's why we dedicated that last module all about it. And instead of just giving you one giant pep talk, it was like, all right, now let's talk about all the pitfalls and the hiccups that you're going to experience along the way. Because we didn't want people to think that, hey, you can do these things and it's going to be perfect and you're going to get all these fantastic results and they're going to be immediate. No, that's not realistic. And so if you're talking about launching a side hustle or trying something new or starting a business, we cover everything from pricing to taxes, upfront costs, ongoing costs, goal setting, and being realistic about all of those things, because that's what you go through. Mm-hmm. Those are the, dare I say, thumbtacks you're going to step on, you know, barefoot as you're walking through this new way of thinking. And so we wanted to make sure that people were prepared for that. They knew what they were going to experience. And they had a couple of critical questions that they could ask themselves to make sure that they went through this final stage thoughtfully so that it improves the likelihood that they can achieve the results that they're looking for.
Yes.
So if you're interested in the course, you can find it through the Success Achievers community under All Access Library. The website is achievers.success.com. That's achievers.success.com. And we'll leave a link in the show notes. All right. Final thoughts.
My final thoughts are, you know, when we think of wages as the only form of income, we rob ourselves of so much power. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons we were excited about becoming the money editors for Success was because of the way they describe their readers in their community. They said they're the only magazine that focuses on people who take full responsibility for their own development and income. And that's important to know. You are in the driver's seat here. You don't have to become anything you don't want to become in your pursuit of wealth. You get to decide how much is enough and what you do with the access. And I just feel like we would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge that for some people, having income goals can feel a little icky. And I empathize with that because we haven't always seen a lot of relatable examples. But I'm telling you, once you understand the purpose of income, our hope is that the quest for more of it doesn't automatically trigger consumerist thoughts and instead challenges you to design a better life for you and your loved ones.
I love that. My final thoughts are not that different from yours. It actually goes back to something that you said earlier in this podcast. And it was that if you don't give yourself a purpose, or if you don't give your income a purpose, then someone else will. And their purpose for your income is likely not in your best interest. And so who is that someone else? Well, it could be another for-profit business. Mm-hmm. It could be another person who's looking for a handout. It could be a bunch of things that are at the checkout counter screaming at you, yes, asking you to like add it to your cart, even though you don't need it. That's what happens when you wander aimlessly. You don't really know or have a clear purpose for your income. Then other people say, oh, I know what you should do. Buy this. Mm-hmm. Try this. Free trial. And all of a sudden it turns into you not really feeling like you have enough, even though you probably did. But what you're really, really missing is a really, really clear purpose for your income. And your income is the most powerful tool you have to building wealth. And so it helps to have a thorough understanding of what to do with it and how to grow so you can achieve your financial goals. This is especially relevant for the frugal savers out there who focus more on saving $10 a month and earning an extra $100 a month, because the reality is you can do both.
That's right.
And hopefully the course helps to spark some ideas and helps someone out there build a more effective plan.
Love it. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Rich and Regular podcast presented by Success. The purpose of the ratings and reviews page is to help people find our podcast and let them know what you think. So if you like what you heard, please leave us a 5-star rating and review. We will see y'all next week.
See you.